You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Racism in America can take on many forms, and the nuance between things like overt and covert racism can make discrimination much more difficult to see, discuss, and ultimately address. To learn more about this important and complicated topic, I spoke with Chris Bridges from the Equal Justice Society. He is an attorney who also leads trainings in implicit bias. I started the conversation by asking him to define the kinds of racism currently operating in our society.
So overt racism is the more obvious, easy to identify racist activity that to most common or lay people, they recognize it, they identify it quickly as racist, and they proceed. That can be something very visible. So for example, police officers putting their knee on the neck of a person who's handcuffed and lying prone on the ground. That's very overt racism. Covert racism is more insidious. So covert racism refers to incidents where a person is not necessarily getting a job or not getting promoted, or they're pulled over for a broken taillight. And so within overt racism and covert racism, you can find individual acts of racism. Individual racism refers to beliefs or attitudes and actions by individuals that support or perpetuate this idea of superiority over another group, another ethnicity, another gender, etc. And that can include certain situations like telling a racist joke. It can include, again, the cop situation. Police brutality often rears its head in individual racism. Systemic racism, it's a broader concept and a more infused concept, a function of disproportionate social factors that impact usually often African-American and other people of color in the form of poverty, employment, housing, education, et cetera. So these are more systems of oppression or systems that are fueled by oppressive techniques. So when you're not getting proper housing, when you're denied a bank loan, when you can't get a job, when you're not receiving the same education that your white counterparts are receiving. Those are examples of systemic racism. They're things that are beyond the individual, but are so interwoven into our society that it allows the oppressive nature of people of color to persist. And implicit bias is, I would say, the sister or brother to explicit bias. Implicit bias is very much connected to the ways in which individual racism and systemic racism are allowed to continue or to carry on. So implicit bias really refers to unconscious biases that we all have, to be frank, that impact a person's stereotypes or attitudes, and they operate without an individual's conscious awareness. So these individual attitudes or stereotypes can affect how people think about certain things, what actions they take, or what decisions they make in reference to whatever subject their biases cover. So implicit biases are ways in which unconscious bias allows a lot of racially disparate behavior to negatively impact different groups.
Can you speak a little bit more about covert racism and implicit bias? I think oftentimes when we're having conversations about discrimination, people immediately jump to overt racism as the only form of racism. But I'm wondering if you could unpack a little bit more why covert racism is such an important distinction.
Sure. So covert racism is more insidious. It's harder to identify, and that's by design. So, for example, a Supreme Court case, Washington v. Davis, back in the 70s, basically stated that individuals who were asserting a racist claim that they're being discriminated on the basis of race were found to not be able to really go forward with that claim if they weren't able to easily prove that somebody did something racist to them or they were acting with racial animus. And what that means is, unless I could prove that you called me N-word or something and said, I'm not going to give you your job because you're a black N or something to that effect. Unless that happened, then the courts weren't really going to hear or recognize your claim that you've been subject of racism. So that's where covert racism comes into play. A lot of the ways in which even our judicial system has allowed racism to persist and the abuse and the disparate treatment of people of color, especially black folks, to persist both in the court systems and our social society, et cetera, is through covert racism. It's the ways in which where you don't have to out outright say that you're denying somebody a job because of their skin color, but you're able to do so on other factors that are much harder to identify or point to and say, I knew that was because of race. Similarly, implicit bias is a cousin to that experience. It's a cousin to the racial treatment that is hidden. Implicit biases are actually not necessarily on the conscious level of perpetrators. So even if a person is acting covertly, even if they're deciding to deny somebody a job based off of their color, but they're not going to say as much, that person is still consciously thinking of what he's doing and knows why he's doing it. Implicit bias, however, can still allow racial or racialized impacts on communities and can operate and happen without individuals actually thinking that they're behaving in a racist way. There are individuals who would say, I'm not racist. I voted for Obama. But yet they're still behaving or making decisions in a way that's incredibly problematic for communities of color. And they are not consciously aware that they're doing so. And sadly, because of how systemic racism and structural racism exists in our country, these individuals very much have been conditioned to not only act in those racially detrimental ways, but also not to realize that they're doing it. And so that is why implicit bias is important to understand and unpack, because there are a lot of folks who think they're not behaving in overt or covertly racist ways, but are in fact impacting communities of color in racialized ways and negatively racialized ways, because of the biases they have and have been conditioned to have as a result of living in this society.
Perhaps you could share some tips on how people of all backgrounds could start to interrogate their own implicit biases.
There are several different ways. Usually I charge for this information, but I will share it for free.
We appreciate it. These are difficult times.
Indeed they are. Indeed they are. Implicit biases are an ongoing, developing, constantly evolving set of research and studies to try and unpack and understand and determine what the best strategies are. That, to give a clear-cut answer as to what's going to be the silver bullet, there is none. But what I can say is that there are ways in which folks, all individuals, can take steps to try and start reducing the biases they have. Can't eliminate them. As I mentioned previously, we have been so ingrained in a racist society, a structurally racist and individually racist society, that we have learned from all of these lessons and we've ingrained those lessons into our psyches and into our persons. But we can take steps to reduce them. And so what that looks like is taking steps as an individual to try and be aware of what your personal biases may be. We talk at EJS a lot about race, but we want to acknowledge, and we always acknowledge, that everybody has implicit biases. Our biases impact different people in different ways. And we try to focus on the biases that are having a more collective, significant impact on communities, i.e. race and gender. But we do always acknowledge that everybody has biases. So we can take the implicit association test, for example, as a means to learn about what biases we as individuals might be prone to. That test is easily searchable on Google. It's the IAT test, or implicit association test. And we always offer that as a quick method to just kind of start talking and thinking about ways in which you might be biased. Another example is to be more motivated to learn new info and engage in activities that counter stereotypes. So, for example, having convos across cultural boundaries. It's very fascinating to know that still today in 2020, 65% of the U.S. population is still white people, people of European descent. About 13-14% is African American, and about 16-19% is Latino. So a significant portion of the population is still white, and actually, according to recent studies, do not have that much interaction with people outside of their ethnic group. So recognizing that there's an important need to be able to understand that stories, narratives, experiences of the Black and Brown, Latinx folks are not necessarily reaching this large populace, this large group of people, and figuring out ways to counter that. There's also, speaking in addition to individual interactions, thinking about the ways that you can increase your contact with non-homogenous groups. For example, as I was just mentioning, there's a study stating that white folks are the least likely of all ethnic groups to have anybody outside of their circle, their social circle, who's not white. They might have one person of color friend, but that's probably the closest. On average, that's about it. So increasing contact with folks who are not in the same ethnic group as you, not in the same social circle as you, would be critical for a lot of reasons. One, representation. So I'm not suggesting that every white person out there in this 65% population go get a black friend or a token black friend. Not suggesting that at all. But I am suggesting that recognizing where there aren't black people, Latinx people, Indian people, Asian folks, et cetera, recognizing where those people are not, and then figuring out ways to make sure they are included, make sure that their voices are heard, their narratives are shared in spaces that you frequent. And that can be something similar to diversifying the workplace. When you're taking on these activities, when you're pushing for this kind of engagement, you will probably see an increase in the ability, not just of representation, but a reduction in the amount of racialized bias and bias actions that occur because there are more people joining the conversation.
Thank you for sharing this information with us today. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.